One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation about the ghostly guests at the Rhodes Hotel. Just north of Indianapolis lies the quaint town of Atlanta. And that's where you'll find the Rhodes Hotel, steeped in an eerie and remarkable past. Constructed in 1893 by Newton and Clara Rhodes, the Rhodes Hotel boasts a captivating history. In its day, it was a very successful business for the family. However, tragedy also struck the family with the loss of their beloved son in the hotel and the eventual demise of both Newton and Clara within its walls. Following Newton's passing, Clara embarked on a new venture for the hotel. And amidst the backdrop of infamous gangsters and the sorrowful demise of the hotel owner's family, reports of ghostly apparitions abound. There have been many reports of sightings and tales of conversations between past guests echoing through the rooms. It's no longer a hotel, but those who are brave enough can investigate those who still reside there. Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation about the history, the hauntings, and the ghostly guests at the Rhodes Hotel with Mike Couch. Now, first off, let's start with where this is. So it's in Atlanta, Indiana, which by looking at a map seems not too far. It's north of Indianapolis.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, by the way.
You're very welcome.
Yes, it's just a bit northeast of Indianapolis. Yeah.
Now, this is a tiny little town.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, at one time, it was actually booming. There was a gas boom. Gas boom.
Yeah, let's make that clear.
Late 1800s.
No explosion.
Yeah. Yeah, no explosion. None that we're aware of anyway. So, there was a gas boom here, and actually the town was hopping. The word was there were like three hotels in the area. There were like five saloons. it was a pretty busy place. And then after all that died out, it just really slowed down. And now it's just a tiny little town with like 700 and some people in here.
And, you know, that is what happens with a lot of the small towns. There was a time that the railroad came nearby and there was hotels built and, you know, mm-hmm. and businesses built around that. And then that kind of dies off. And so does the town. And really, the Rhodes Hotel, for even in the boom, a 22-room hotel, that's pretty good sized.
Yeah, it's... And speaking of the railroad tracks, there's tracks like a block away from here. And this was a layover for the train going back and forth to Chicago.
And that kind of helps with the paranormal activity, I'm going to guess, because they say there's a connection with train tracks. I don't know what it is, but I've heard that from a lot of people. I don't know how they're connected exactly.
That. Yeah. Now, I've heard that as well.
How did you end up getting involved? And what is your involvement with the Rhodes Hotel?
Well, now I'm handling all the, the majority of the tours and, you know, the investigations and events and stuff like that happen here. I do have help whenever I'm not around. So I live on the property, and whenever I'm gone, like if there's events going on or something and I'm gone, we have help here. That we have people that help us out here whenever I can't be here. And right now, my sister owns it. Before that, my charity actually owned the property.
And do you still have the charity?
I do have a charity until the end of the year. Unfortunately, due to health reasons, I have stopped the charity. So this is the last year of that happening.
And for a while, the money raised at the hotel went to your charity, which I thought was wonderful. So the money raised went to help people. And now the money that you make goes back into the building, because this was built in 18... What's the year it was built?
1893.
So this is a building that constantly, any building needs upkeep. But built in 1893, that's kind of a constant need to put that money back into the mm-hmm. building to help keep it going.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and like what you just mentioned, you know, before with that, the charity, of course, the main focus is helping amputee kids. But at the same time, if there was things that needed to be done here, you know, we would work on upkeep as we were able to do. But, you know, I can only do so much because the main focus is on, you know, the charity, like helping kids. So now that is the charity going away and everything, and my sister owning it, now the main focus is everything that comes in is going to go right back into the building. At some point in time, you know, because like all the things that need to be, upgraded, updated, whatever.
Yeah.
Here, which is, there's, you know how it is, it's a 130-year-old building, it's constant work that needs to be done. So now the focus is just, let's put everything back into it. And, you know, everybody that's doing investigations is helping us do things, you know, to make this building better, and hopefully it'll stand for another 130 years.
See, that's what I think so wonderful. There's a lot of buildings that are really still here because of, I'm going to call it paranormal tourism. Because people are interested in going in and doing investigations in these buildings. If it wasn't for them, I think there's so many buildings that wouldn't be standing today. They'd be falling apart.
I agree. You hear a lot of places that are doing things to keep the places intact, in good condition. It's a lot of work and a lot of money.
It is. So what year did you get involved then with the Rhodes Hotel? Because you've been involved for a while now.
Yeah, so the charity bought it in 2017, a little bit behind that. If you know Robin Terry that owns Ashmore Estates.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I talked to him before. Great guy.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's a great guy, definitely. He gets a hold of me out of nowhere and says that the owner was looking to sell, And he was like, you know, what do you think about the charity owning the property? It could be more income coming in to help, you know, the kids and stuff. And I'm like, that would be great. But two things, don't have the money. Next thing is, even if I had the money, that's kids that we could help. So cool thought, but I'm out, you know. And he's like, that's not what I'm asking you. So he's like, what I'm asking you is, what do you think about the charity owning? And I'm like, all right, I'm listening. His idea was, what if a no interest loan was, you know, fronted for the property and he was paid back whenever he got the money back? You know, a percentage would go to him and a percentage would stay with the charity. You know, and any work that would need to be done, we would address that as it happened. So I would have been like, I've been crazy to say, no, I don't want to do that.
Right.
So, yeah, so we did it. And, you know, it's the charity had it for, I don't know, about 5.5 years, maybe. Something like that. I don't know. My math is horrible off the top of my head.
I think you're about right there with that.
Yeah. I think it was probably about 5.5 years or so, something like that. And then with the health issues that came up, you know, I decided, okay, it's time to focus on my health. And, you know, just nonprofits are so much work.
Oh, my gosh. I've worked at a nonprofit, and it is. And it's constant fundraising, and it's constant. Mm-hmm. It is a lot of work.
It is, yeah. And I, you know, just all that stuff, just I was like, you know, it's time that I focus on my health. And, you know, so I made the hard decision, okay, it's time to stop the charity. And with that, I had to do something with the building. You know, the charity had to do something with it. You know, it either has to go to another nonprofit, or has to be sold, or whatever. You know, and it's like, I'm like, okay, if it goes to another nonprofit, what would they do with it? I mean, you got this old historic building. You know, would they take care of it? Would, you know, what's going to happen to the building? That was a big concern. So, you know, my sister was like, you know, I'll buy the property so we can keep doing what we're doing, and this, then we can shift things and we can focus 100% on the building, instead of, you know, the main focus, the charity, and then the building as we're able to do it. So I had to bring in a nonprofit attorney, you know, because you have to be so careful mm-hmm. with what you do with things, you know, especially when it's involving a family member. You know, so we went through all the hoops and all that stuff, and we got that taken care of. And as of, I think it was April, I believe, my sister took over, bought the place, and I'm still here.
So when you first were approached by Robin about the building 2017, how were you feeling about paranormal? Would you have landed more in the skeptical column or a believer column, or kind of maybe in the middle?
You know, I'm in the middle. And at the same time, I was in the paranormal field long before this place actually came about. I had a personal experience, and then, you know, that kind of pushed me into, you know, the curiosity and stuff like that. And, yeah, I'm still, you know, I'm skeptical about things to an extent with it, because you know how it is. There's a lot of things we can explain, and then there's those things that happen that we're just scratching our head saying, I don't know how to explain right. what just happened or what I just saw or whatever.
And because I'm nosy, and if you don't want to share, you don't have to. But what was the paranormal experience that happened to you that got you interested?
Yeah, so I have a friend that lived not a long ways away, but probably, you know, 30 to 40 minutes or so away. And I went over one night and was hanging out, and we were watching movies and got really late. It's like 2 or 3 in the morning. And they're like, hey, I know you don't live very far, but I got an extra room. Go upstairs. You can sleep in the room. Go home when you get up. I'm like, all right, fair enough. That'll work. I'll do that. I was pretty tired, you know, watching movies so late. I go upstairs, go get in bed, and you know how you wake up sometimes and it's like it takes you a minute to kind of wake up, focus, and there's times that you just open your eyes and you're just alert, like, first thing.
Yeah, and that kind of, where am I?
Yeah. I had that very alert sense, like, when I open my eyes and I see a little girl at the side of the bed, and then no more than I kind of, like, rub my eyes and, like, wait a minute, you know, and then she's gone. So I was like, I know what I just saw, you know, but so then the next morning I'm acting all weird because it kind of freaked me out. And I was just, you know, I didn't say anything about it. I was like, I'm just going to leave it alone, not say anything. And my friend picked up that I was acting kind of weird, you know, and they were just like, did you see the little girl? I'm like, wait, this is something you should have told me long before now. Like, I should have known this like a long time ago. Now you're telling me. But yeah, so that's, after that, that's kind of what drew me into, you know, wondering
what else is there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And with them not telling you, that really does validate then what you saw, because you had no idea there was a little girl, and then having them tell you that, would be like, holy crap, I did see her.
Yeah, because, you know, one of the things here is I don't like telling my experiences or other people's experiences. I mean, I'll tell people if they really want to know at the beginning of the night, but I'd rather compare notes at the end of the night, because I don't want to influence anything. You know, when we do the public investigations, one of the big things I do is like, I'm not going to sit and tell you, hey, we see shadows in this corner all the time, because I've embedded it in the back of your mind, and whether you realize it or not, you're going to pay attention to that corner. And I was like, I would rather somebody say I was in this room and I thought I saw a shadow. Was it over here in the corner? You know, because this is something that happens that we see on a more regular basis because I'm here all the time. So, you know, so then you kind of validate what their experience was, if you kind of compare notes at the end of the night. I had times I've stopped people mid-sentence. I mean, because there's a something that happens here, and I don't tell people about it purposely. I just kind of leave that out. And this happened a while back. There was a group at the end of the night. They're like, so we had something kind of odd happen, and I'm like, was it this? And they're like, how did you know? I was like, that's what it was then, right? Yeah.
See, and I would ask you to share that, but someone listening is going to go investigate, and that's going to be in the back of their head if we share it on the show. But I do find that validating. By not telling them, and then they tell you they had the same experience. It's like, aha.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's... not that anybody would, but how easy is it for somebody to come in here and say, I experienced this, and me to say, oh yeah, that happens all the time. I would much rather, you know, I mean, and there's times too that people have had something and I'm like, that's a first. But yeah, to me, it just, and like you said, it's validating if you can stop somebody mid-sentence and be like, was it this?
Mm-hmm. Let's go into the history of the hotel. It was, as we were talking about, it was built in 1893. Newton Rhodes and Clara opened the hotel, and it's big. It's 22 rooms. I know there was a natural gas boom. There's not a word way to say that without having to clarify an explosion. It was, there's a lot of people coming to town to make some money.
Natural gas. Yep.
And so they built a hotel, and then they raised their own family in this hotel. And so what I found fascinating by this, and we'll get to the plot twist in a minute, because there is one, because I'm just thinking this is, you know, and I'm sure they were a sweet couple who were trying to make some money and open the inn at the right time, the right place, and were able, I'm going to guess, to make a pretty good living.
Yeah.
So they went on, and they had... I know one son died in the home. Was there more than one son that, or child that died, or was it just the son, Everett?
It was just the son. The daughter, she lived on, and she was actually the last Rhodes member, a family member that actually had the property. When Hazel, the daughter, when she passed away, they basically took all the furniture and everything out of the place, auctioned it off, and that was that. It was empty for quite a while. And but with that, something that's kind of cool, like, you know, I'm the same way. History, I love history and, mm-hmm. and learning things. And we had a few years ago, there was a lady that had posted on social media, and Gina, one of the people that she helps us here all the time. She contacts me and is like, this lady says she has things that belong to the Rhodes family, and made a post and was like, does anybody know who might want it? And she was like, first thing is like, thought about you. And I was just like, yes, what is it? You know? So, but what happened is all the furniture and everything was auctioned off. There was a few boxes of things that were left. This lady's father actually took those few boxes of things home, put them in his garage. They sat there all these years. He stumbles across these and is like, hey, does anybody know anybody who would want these? And so, of course, I go get them. I contact her. I go get the stuff and come back, open it up. And there's all these postcards that are all addressed to the Rhodes family, different family members that are all dated like late 1800s, like 1901, wow. 1905, just all these early 1900s. So I'm just like, this is where they belong. This is part of the history here. So we put a number of those out to display for people that come in that are more on the history side to be able to see that these were things that belonged to the Rhodes family.
What a great find. And it might have even filled in by reading them. You kind of are snooping into their lives, but you might have been able to get a little bit more information on who they were and how they lived, what they did, yeah. what they were interested in.
Yeah, it's something else, like just to kind of backtrack just a little bit to what we were talking about, the 22 rooms. There's 10 rooms actually upstairs, and two of those rooms are bathrooms. But of course, back then, we're pretty sure that those were hotel rooms, the way they're set up, similar to the other ones. And of course, they had chamber pots back then. We just think, you know, of course, when plumbing became a thing, that they just, those two rooms changed and two bathrooms upstairs. And then downstairs, there's like three parlor rooms, kitchen, dining room, you know.
How many square feet is this? Because it's big.
It's big, but it's not as big as you would think. It's about 4,500 square feet.
Okay, that's good size. I will
say, it's a pretty good size, but it's not, you know, like when people think a hotel, they're going to show up and it's going to be, you know, this place is going to take up like a block or something. And
right.
Not quite that big, but it is a pretty good size building.
And when you look at a picture of it, number one, I think if I was to drive past it, without even knowing one thing about it, I just think if I drove past it, I would say that place is haunted, number one. But it actually doesn't really look like a hotel. It looks more like a house, a large house.
It does, yeah.
A large haunted house.
And the funny thing with that, like my parents were up the other day, and I don't think my sister was here, but we were outside, and these kids were driving their bicycles down the street, and I hear one of them say, that's the haunted house. And they're like looking and like, you know, they're like, whoa, you know, like all this stuff. And yeah, it's kind of funny.
So I want to talk a little, let's go to this plot twist in the history of the Rhodes Hotel. Because so Everett died in 1909. They kept the hotel going. The population, the natural gas boom started dying down. So I'm sure they're struggling with the hotel. Newton ends up dying. Now, jump in if I'm getting any of this wrong. Newton ends up dying the hotel in 1926. So now Clara's left to run it. Clara makes an interesting business decision. Here's the plot twist. Because when I was reading up about it, when I came across this, I don't know why it made me laugh out loud. It was so unexpected. Because I guess in my head, I'm thinking Newton and Clara, I'm not wanting to judge them at all, but they just seem like 1890s, early 1900s, probably this sweet couple running a hotel. But Clara made an interesting business decision after Newton died, and I'll let you share what that was.
Yeah, well, see, Newton, before he passed, he was a traveling salesman, so he was gone a lot. So Clara was running the hotel. But yeah, after Newton passed away, we're still trying to figure this out. But like, yeah, there's all these rumors that she wanted to keep the doors open to the place. So eventually it became a speakeasy and a brothel.
That surprised me. It's like,
yeah.
Now, I could almost see it the other way around. I think I wouldn't have been as surprised if Newton would have decided to make it a speakeasy and a brothel. But the fact that Clara, but, you know, she's probably trying to figure out how to pay the bills. That's my guess.
Yeah,
and this is like late 1920s, early 1930s, Prohibition. And I have no idea, but it just seems like someone approached her and said, hey, you know, you could be running liquor through here. We could put a speakeasy in here. Or maybe she came up with a business model and found somebody to help her. I don't know. But
who knows? Yeah.
So then the life of the hotel kind of took a different turn in there. So it's a different clientele. Yeah. Different people are coming by, like John Dillinger and Al Capone. At least I've read that.
Yeah, the thing with those two guys, I've been at this place for, like, I don't know, pushing 6.5 years now, I think. Capone's name has come up a couple of times. Can't validate it. Of course, probably no way to validate it. Not if he was here, not like he came in and signed a guest book and saying, yep, I'm here.
Right.
Dillinger, on the other hand, we don't have that proof. Same with him. Same situation. But what's interesting is I've had people that's lived here their whole life that, like, the town's so small, I have to go to the post office to get, you know, to get my mail at the P.O. box. So, there's been times that people will just be like, you the guy at the hotel? Yeah. Let me tell you something. okay, let's hear it. And I've had multiple people tell me that at the back west corner of the building, out, like, in the back side of the building there were steps that went up that went to the back door upstairs, and they would tell me that Dillinger would come up and go in through the back door upstairs. So I'm like, all right, that's interesting. And, of course, that back door, it was there because the stairs are gone. But then when we were remodeling this back room that I stay in, when we pulled the drywall off that wall, you could see the outline where the steps used to be. We also had, back in April, there was a lady that came in, and she was like, my grandfather lived down the road, and he would tell me, you know, stories of seeing John Dillinger here. I'm like, wait, he actually saw Dillinger here on the property? And she's like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, really? And then before I had a chance to, you know, talk to her about it, say, hey, you know, is it possible to talk to him? He'd already passed away. Uh-huh. So, you know, I think it's just one of those things we're probably never going to really fully know 100% that he was here or not. But it sounds like from the stories that he was.
And when you think about Clara, and even if, you know, she's like, hey, I came up with this idea myself, she still would have to get the liquor from somewhere. It's not like you could call a liquor distributor. Yeah. The people who were distributing liquor were those people. And they were running these massive operations. And so it wasn't like you just called your local distributor. You had to deal with these gangsters.
Yeah. And who knows? Maybe that led to them being here. Who knows?
Does the hotel have, I heard it had hidden rooms and trick doors.
Yeah, there is one room that's kind of closed off to itself. It comes back into the area that I'm in. Like, once you go out the back door of the building, you're walking into my room, where I'm at. that back room that leads to that back door. Yeah, there's a hidden door there and stuff now, but pretty sure that's not original. One of the previous owners had built that and put it up, but it was kind of set up like a bar type area. Don't know how long it's been set up. Obviously it was pretty old and very outdated, you know, with the room, but it did have like this, you know, countertop and stuff on there that at one time that, you know, was kind of set up like somebody had kind of built it in to the room at some point.
And is it true that there was a prostitute there, Sarah, and she was murdered in the hotel?
That's what we don't know exactly what happened to her. There's rumors of that, but I mean, the fact is we don't really know what happened to her. Another thing too, like if you probably read this too, if you read up on the place, and this is a good time for me to throw this out there. There are all these rumors that's went on for years and years that there was a preacher named Lester Poor that hung himself. We recently discovered not true.
Oh, interesting. I did see that. Yeah.
Yeah, we uncovered a document. My sister, Gina, and myself were researching, and we found a document that has a Reverend Lester Poor that was in this area that went to Washington State, and he passed there, I believe it was in 1967.
How the heck did that little game of telephone end up like that?
who knows? You know, and we're still trying to figure out how that came about. I mean, you know, because you have these questions like, did someone hang themselves here and the names got mixed up? Did it not happen at all? How did his name get pulled into this? You know, if someone did, you know, I mean, there's all these questions that we have no idea. Like what? But I mean, we did debunk this because I mean, what are the odds there's another preacher by the name of Lester Poor,
right,
that was in this area too and, you know, hung himself, but yet there's another Reverend Lester Poor that was in this area that went to Washington State and he died there. So we're pretty confident to say that that didn't happen, at least not with him. I mean, it could have happened and names got mixed up. Who knows?
And that wraps up part one of our conversation about the Rhodes Hotel in Atlanta, Indiana. If you'd like more information on the hotel, as well as paranormal investigations, visit their website at rhodeshotel.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts where you can try it for 3 days free. You can also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and find everything there, also all ad-free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thanks for listening.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets tickets now at cosi.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at cosi.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at cosi.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at cosi.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at cosi.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at cosi.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at cosi.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at cosi.org.